Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba. We're continuing our season previews, team by team, all 30 teams around Major League Baseball to get you ready for the 2023 fantasy baseball season. And we finish up, I think, the AL East with this wonderful episode going to Florida, wonderful Florida, Tampa Bay, Florida, to talk Tampa Bay Rays. And in order to do so, have a special guest, a man that knows the Rays inside and out, also knows fantasy baseball quite well, as you can find him on rotowire.com. Bold predictions are out right now. It's that time of the year. Get him on Sleeper on the Bust on Sundays and occasionally other times as well. And on Twitter at Jason Collette. Jason, how we doing, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Doing well. It's that time of the year, so it's good to have you back on and talk some Rays.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody else come dressed for the part like me. For those of you guys just listening, got the hat, got the shirt, got the neon light in the back that my buddy got me for my 50th birthday. So, yeah, I am dressed for success to talk about Tampa Bay Rays and them doing better this year.
Yeah, you know better than anybody. They're always seem like they're just so close, but so far it's like a piece here, piece there. And before we get actually into players, I just want your general thoughts. They actually extended some guys recently, which to me, like, it wasn't like crazy money, of course, but for the Rays to kind of, to me, invest in multiple players at one time kind of felt like, wow, this is kind of a different approach. So what was your thoughts on that as like just a fan?
Yeah, as a fan, I really love it for, like, especially Pete Fairbanks. And to me, what really spoke volumes for me, you know, Pete Fairbanks, two Tommy John surgeries in his history. He had a pretty severe, oblique core muscle injury that took him out of for a while. So his health track record hasn't been the best, but he's gotten better and better and better in every year since the team's acquired him. And now he got paid for it. And, you know, we can talk more about him as his specific role later. And then Yandy Diaz, same type of thing. It's, you know, yeah, he had flaws when they acquired him for next to nothing from Cleveland. And he, too, has gotten better and better and better every year. And he's been underappreciated. And he's like one of the guys behind the scenes that helps keep the clubhouse together type of thing situation. So I like seeing those types of guys around because, again, when you're going to ball on a budget, you got to play on some of those. You got to play on some of those fringes. And the fact that they weren't able – I mean, they were able to convince Zach Eflin to come back to Florida. When I say come back – he went to high school right up the street from UCF. In fact, he was supposed to go to UCF. And then he got drafted highly by the Padres and said, I'm going to go get paid, back before NIL became a big thing, right? So, like convincing him to come back to Florida wasn't as difficult, but they didn't get any hitters to come yet. I mean, there's still some that are out there. Maybe that's what they're playing, the waiting game. Game of chicken to see what can happen because the team said they wanted to add offense and they haven't added anything this offseason.
Well, there's still guys out there, so we'll see. You know, there's always Elvis Andrus if you're feeling it. Just kidding. But he's still sitting out there for some reason. The Red Sox wanted Mondesi instead, so that's a whole other conversation. Let's talk Rays. We'll start offense and then go pitching like we used to do on this show. And we'll start with the main man, Wander Franco, who's ADP's around 93 the last few weeks. And we know it was kind of an injury-riddled season last year, still at like, you know, six homers, eight stolen bases, did his thing, hit for a decent average. It seems like there's always this higher expectations for Wander. And again, the caveat I'll mention, you probably will too, he's only 22. Like, he's still young. But what's your thoughts on Franco? Because for me personally, I still have a hard time drafting him, not seeing it yet. But I know there's some that believe this guy is the next best thing.
Yeah, you know, I took him in the fifth round last year, fifth or sixth. I think I was picking towards the end, five, and it was just like, if he's there, I'll take him. And it did. Right now, it comes down to a balance, and we often see this where some guys are better. You know, the hype and the real baseball play reputation bleed over into the fantasy. And so, yeah, you know, he was arguably the best prospect in baseball, and you want that to translate to fantasy, but it doesn't always translate to fantasy because Wander's best skill is his bat-to-ball skill, but that doesn't exactly translate to 20-plus homers yet. And he's quick enough on his feet, but he's not blazing fast. And he doesn't get a 20 steals yet. I mean, these are things that can still happen for him. And the time he missed is going to hurt him in his overall run production. So he can do a lot of things well. He doesn't do any one fantasy category extremely well yet. I keep saying the word yet because that has to be his mindset. I can't do this yet. And you hear about a lot of this in the business world. And that's where I see he can contribute across all five categories. When you watch him, you can see the maturity just from at bat to at bat, sometimes even pitch to pitch. And he's a better hitter from the left side than he is the right side. To me, I'm more impressed in that capacity with him. So I do like to see the growth in his game. I just have to remind myself that just because of what he does as a real baseball player doesn't always translate over into that fantasy superstardom that you want to see. I mean, people want him to be like Jose Ramirez, his neighbor. God, I forget the exact connection. They want him to be Jose Ramirez, but it took Jose Ramirez a while to become Jose Ramirez. So got to have some patience.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'm still kind of doing the wait and see approach. And one of these years he'll do it, and I'll just kind of be like, okay, well, I missed it this year, but now we can start, you know, playing the game. Because I believe there's definitely something there, like you're saying, he's just so young. Some are putting, they say, the cart before the horse type thing. Like, yeah. let's let him develop. Let's let him figure it out and make it happen. Now, a gentleman that I have been rostering everywhere for a couple of years now is Randy Rosarena, and I'm back on the train again this year. ADP just inside 40 over the last couple of weeks. I love the power speed he brings to the table. Batting average obviously is not his best asset, but not bad, really not bad. And the fact the Rays just let him run, which is a beautiful thing. So I love Randy. What's your thoughts on Randy heading into this season?
Yeah, they let him run. And I say this because
not always successfully.
When you combine, like, Baseball Reference has the stat outs on the bases, and that is running into outs, and that does not factor in being picked off. But if you combine pickoffs and outs on the bases, Randy Rosarena was number one. Jose Altuve was number two. So, you know, with some success comes some problems, right? And so that's where Randy Rosarena, he would, you know, delusions of grandeur. I'm going to make it home. I'm going to score. Like, he would get thrown out, especially when you get thrown at third or home. It's like, oh, but he would do it so often it became a running joke. That said, they do let him run. Like you said, you know, he runs a lot. I would say he probably – his stolen base opportunities, attempts against opportunities, is probably one of the highest in the league for a guy that does not hit leadoff. And so that's the beautiful thing about him. He can put in that volume like we saw last year, and he can just continue to run, which is fun. They didn't seem to curtail him at all last year. And they just let him keep doing this thing, even when he was running into outs. It was, and to his credit, I mean, there wasn't a lot of aggressively stupid. There were some. There were some. It was like, man, what were you thinking? And other ones, it was like a 50-50 play. And, you know, it is what it is on that regard. But he is going to be – he's a volume play, and he would be even better if – like, Yandy Diaz gets on base, great. But Yandy Diaz is a station to station. He's not going to – like, Yandy Diaz was another guy that ran into a lot of outs on the bases. He was fourth overall in the league because it takes a while to get that truck moving. If Randy had a better guy in front of him that could, like, really get on base, he could be a monster and runs driven in because it's something he does really well. But when he's got a guy like Yandy Diaz clogging up the bases in front of him, who's on first base more often than he's on second base, that's where it kind of limits his upside. But again, he's a volume play who's been able to stay out there just about every day.
Yeah, and that's why I love him. It's like, you know, he burst on the scene in that playoff run that we saw with the Rays, and people are like, oh, well, it was his first run. Then he backed it up again. And then he backed it up again, and it's like, okay, this is who he is, for reals. Just for fun here, if we're talking kind of kind of similar types, but maybe a little different. They're going about 12 picks apart. Would you rather have Randy Rosarena or Cedric Mullins?
Justin's going to listen to this. So I'm going to say, of course I want Randy. of course I want him. It just he's going to have the volume type. He's going to have that volume overall. And Mullins will have more steals, would have more runs. But then that's where I would put, and batting average could be a wash. But at the end, yeah, I want the more home runs. I want the more RBIs, especially in this year where we don't know how, new year, more rules. Who knows what we're going to get? And so I want to try to get more offense. So I'd take a Rosarena there.
What about this one? They're about 25 picks apart, and Rosarena should have the batting average advantage, but power speed could be a little more interesting. Rosarena or Adelis Garcia?
Man, I have both in XFL, and I feel blessed. Yes. Thank you, Don Drucker, as you retired, giving me your team, because I have both of those guys in that league, and that's I don't even have to make that choice. And the funny thing was, like last year, I was running away from Adelis Garcia. Like this year, I don't want to run away. I want Garcia with that difference. I'd rather have Garcia only because. Mm-hmm. The supporting cast immediately around him in the lineup is a better spot. If you believe that some of those guys are going to rebound and or perform where they performed last year, Garcia's in a better spot.
And the last one I'll ask you, and I heard your answer, I believe I caught up on RotoWire podcast today, and going 9 picks ahead of a Rosarena is Michael Harris II.
Oh yeah, give me a Rosarena there, and so for those who didn't hear the RotoWire podcast, yeah. The only reason I say that so quickly is when you look at Harris, we haven't seen him fail yet. We don't know how he handles failure. I said I feel like I'm talking Ian Khan's language because Ian's huge about like the off the field, what happens in the dugout type of thing. But with Harris, you look at the fact that the walk. So few walks, so many strikeouts, and when you look at the history of players like that, the volatility the following season kind of goes all over the place. Yeah. But for the most part, it has not played out that well. And so he's set a high bar for everybody. And I just like it's the market price. Where he's going in the market price right now is I can't do it. I cannot buy in with him going where Harris going in the 28. I think at the time we were talking, I think that keeps going higher with him. He's a great player, and like I said, all the credit in the world to James Anderson last year, who was higher on him than anybody else, and people who took him. A few people I know are like, I took him because James had ranked him 26, and I was like, and they took a deeper look, and we're like, okay, if he believes, let's get a shot, and they were getting him super late. And probably, I would say one of the more like this year, this past year, if you were, Aaron Judge was a champion maker. If you played fantasy football, if you had Travis Kelce and you weren't in the playoffs and or the Super Bowl, I don't know what you did. Cause I won my league and I had Travis Kelce. And it was, every week it was just beautiful. Was he amazing. Was a championship maker. And so getting Harris last year as a championship maker. This year, it kind of feels like, as we were talking earlier about Wander Franco, it's like, okay, we're going to draft on that expectation, and the reality is not going to be what we thought it was by the end of the season.
100% with you. We're on the same page on pretty much all those would-you-rathers. I love Randy. I love Adelis, what he's doing, and Harris costs too much right now. The aforementioned truck named Yandy Diaz that you mentioned, that it takes a while to get that truck moving, he's got an ADP of 254. It's going to hit a top of the order. It's always, to me, a question of can he elevate a baseball and hit home runs or not? But it seems like there's more buzz about him this year. I'll say that much. So what's your thoughts on Yandy Diaz going into this season?
It's funny with him because he can elevate a baseball. It's the mistakes. Like he truly will hit a pitch wherever it is. And if somebody makes a mistake, you can see him. He'll turn and burn on one. Go pull up some of the home run highlights. He can absolutely pull a home run. He can also hit a home run to the opposite field. And so that, that plays out well for him. You look at how they're going to realign defenses this year. I was always shocked how the teams didn't reverse shift him, because if you look at his spray chart, so much of it is to the right of second base. But he is truly somebody that will hit the ball to wherever it's pitched, pull it down the third base line on the ground, pull it down the right field line on the ground in the air. He can do all of that. I would say he benefits with the changes in Toronto when they go to the play there in Toronto, because that's his power that direction, because he does have the power to juice the ball out that direction. It's got to be for him. is got to keep the legs healthy. I mean, like I said, it takes a while to get that truck moving, but it tends to be his legs that get hurt when he's trying to do too much. And the leg came up and barked at him a couple of times last year, but he gets on base. And that's the beauty of him. If you're in OBP format, Diaz just gets on base, and he's continually undervalued because of what he doesn't do. Last year, I want to say I was picking up Yandy in the 23rd, sometimes even the reserve rounds, because of what he doesn't do. Sure, he doesn't steal bases. Sure, he does not. You know, his runs and RBIs are going to be limited by all of his other flaws. But batting average, like, is there a possibility where he could, you know, compete for a batting title? Absolutely. It's there. It's probably a 90th percentile type of thing, 95th percentile thing. But he has the bat, the ball skills to do that. And he knows how to get on base. So if he can get on base, and right now I would say he's the projected leadoff hitter, it could play out well for him as long as those legs stay healthy. The runs should be there, and the batting average should be there. And we'll see how everything else falls in. If he hits leadoff, the RBIs will once again be limited because the bottom of that lineup is not great on paper.
He's interesting because I've heard more people talk about him this year, and ADP third base, the way it gets nasty late, it's an interesting predicament with Yandy. Let's talk Brandon Lau though. This one's tricky. Big time injury season last year. Only played 65 games. He's technically only had one full season in his career, but something that I've always paid attention to. ADP still around 170 ish, give or take. So what's your thoughts on Brandon Lau this year?
You know, he was in his ADP this time last year, was about half that. You know, he was sitting there in the 65, 70 range, if memory serves me correctly. You know, it's like for him, he's somebody that
there's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed. And that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to say I put him in the value of the scrap heap article, but he's in something that I've written this offseason as, you know, this is a guy who hit 39 home runs in 2021. And it's not like we have to even go that far back if he was a guy that hit 39 home runs, like if he did a Josh Bell and hit like his 37 home runs in 2019, be like, okay, bouncy ball. Or if he pulled a Jeff McNeil with the 20 something home runs, okay, bouncy ball. But Lau did it in 2021. So it's like he's able to do that. Yes, he's had some issues hitting lefties, and that's why they have all the righties on the team type of thing. But my bigger question with him, I don't doubt the bat. What I doubt is how they're going to put this lineup together the way it stands right now. Because Lau could play some first base. We really don't know what he could be as a full-time regular defensive second baseman without the shifted alignment, because the team did use a lot of alignments. He has played some outfield as well. So I want to see exactly where he's going to play. That's really my only question for him. At the price, you look at his ADP over the past month, we're looking at 170. I ended up taking him in one of my DCs, and I took him 27 picks below that. I got him to pick 197. If I'm reading this correct, the red just says I got him late, or maybe I took him early. I don't know. Maybe it's the other direction. I took him at 143. I'm sorry. I took him early because when I was looking at the position depth in this particular DC, many of the teams went offense heavy early. And so there was a lot of pitching. So I ended up going to grab bats earlier than the other DC. I did two different, and they play out completely differently. It was weird. But I don't have a problem with Brandon Lau having a rebound this year. We know he can hit. Like you said, it's a matter of him staying on the field. And if they move him off of second base and put him at first base, then it becomes a little easier to keep him on the field.
Yeah, and then you get that MICI eligibility, which is always beautiful. So that could be another plus for him as well. Harold Ramirez is the guy he'd be potentially taking some reps from at first base if that comes to play, or Harold can DH or put, he maybe play the outfield too. Who knows? But he's got an ADP of 365, and he's just an interesting one for me because he's shown like okay hit tools, like average can be there once in a while. Just everything else is kind of like blah, it feels like, with Harold Ramirez. So how do you approach him?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, we saw him hit for average last year. He can make good contact. He loved the multi position eligibility with first base and outfield as we head into the season. But I honestly look at him like if they do some kind of move here during camp, because they've done that before. They signed CJ Cron during camp. They've added, like I saw my buddy Steve tweet, like on this day in Rays history, the Rays added Kelly Johnson back in 2013. So they have been known to make late moves. And to me, if they were to make some kind of trade, Harold Ramirez feels like the guy they would trade because there's some duplicity and there's more upside with Isak Paredes there. But, you know, Ramirez is another one of those guys well-liked in the clubhouse and whatnot. So that's where I'm trying to figure out where his future sits. But if they do make a deal, it feels like he's the type of guy that would get traded to acquire something else they need at another position. What that trade looks like, I don't know. But the overall trade market's been very quiet lately. I keep trying to wish cast some kind of deal. Like I've mentioned, I think I even mentioned on the RotoWire podcast, like Nick Prado sitting there in Kansas City with Vinny Pascatino blocking one spot and MJ Melendez blocking another spot. I would love to see if Nick Prado can pull an Adam Dunn light profile off with all the power of the walks and the strikeouts and do so for my favorite team, who needs that kind of offense and loves the defense that Prado brings to the table. But, you know, I don't know if Kansas City is going to be like, oh, sure, we'll take Harold Ramirez for that. You got to work something else out in that regard. So I don't know if Ramirez is going to stick around the club, but if he is, it's going to be in a reserve capacity if something else goes wrong with some of the other guys.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Like he fills a role if necessary, like you said. But I'd rather see Prado there, see what he could do. I'd rather see somebody with upside. Prado even reminds me, like obviously Nathaniel Lowe is much different now. He's a better player, don't get me wrong. But there's something weird about that profile to me. That seems like you might get a little, at least the power wise in that scenario.
But if we can go former Ray a second, since you brought up Nathaniel Lowe, is one of the things I'm actually concerned about with him this year is if you look at his batted ball profile, he made a lot of opposite field weak contact that like kind of went for hits because of the defensive alignment. Yeah. So I'm curious to see, like, with the law of unintended consequences, what happens when you have, you know, when you have regular alignment and all of a sudden some of those missed hits that were just bouncing through kind of an open infield are now going to have a defender. What happens with Nathaniel Lowe? And not to take anything away from him, it was great to see what he could do because he certainly had his limitations with Tampa Bay in regards to velocity up at the letters and up. And he couldn't lay off it. And he couldn't do anything with it. And he didn't do much more because I went under the hood last year, wrote about it and said, hey, well, you know, what's going on? Why is he having this big year? And it wasn't because he was handling velocity any better. That wasn't happening. It was a lot of this like infield hits, some of the opposite field stuff and hitting it where the defense was giving him opportunities. You know, so kudos to him for doing that. But that flaw that was still there, and it could be there with his brother too, but we haven't had the opportunity to see what's happening with Josh Lowe other than, you know, you have to keep scrolling to find his ADP way down there. Whereas last year people were throwing that dart. And right now, who knows? But he's way down there. He's going at 458, and people are trying to figure out what's going to happen there. But when you look at him, you can tell they're brothers. They have the same setup. They have the same swing. And you know, at the major league level, we saw the younger brother struggle with the velocity up as well. The league gave him a ton of it. He didn't do anything with it.
So are we trying to gamble on Josh at 458, or it's like, nah, not this year?
I
have a DC, like, of course.
Yeah. So in the aforementioned DC that I was in, the guy that took him got him 87 picks after that, got him 545. It's like, man, I would take the chance then. I remember staring at it a couple of times going, I should do this. But then I was in a soft spot where I was trying to grab some pitchers with that. But I let that go for a while. But you know, to me, it's you compared to where people were taking him last year as their fourth or fifth outfielder, because, you know, folks need to remember the AAA numbers for Tampa Bay could be really good because Durham is a really nice place to hit. And so it's like you saw Vidal Bruján do places like that, numbers like that overall, but Durham is a really nice place to hit. And so are a few other places in AAA there too. So that helps some of the numbers, especially a lefty guy like that.
Yeah, makes sense. You mentioned Isak Paredes. We'll jump to him real quick, and then we'll come back to Manny. I'm intrigued by Paredes here. You know, first base, second base, third base eligible, which is great. ADP around 340-ish, give or take. And we saw the power balloon last year to 20 home runs, which is awesome. There's always kind of speculation in Detroit there is power, but you never knew because it was Detroit. And maybe he kind of overachieved last year. Who knows? But it seems like they want to give him a chance in Tampa Bay to kind of explore this opportunity. So what's your thoughts on Paredes heading into 2023?
Yeah, I liked him quite a bit. I mean, he at the time of the deal, this trade was made, everybody's like, wow, Austin Meadows for Isak Paredes. What? And Paredes hit 20 more home runs than Meadows did last year, I believe. I don't know if Meadows got one over the fence. You know, and hopefully he makes his way back.
How's he leading off? I have no idea. Projected to lead off. I don't get it at all.
I saw that too. I'm not buying that for a second. But with Paredes, yeah, again, the Rays always like these versatile players, guys that can move around the field. They've always had guys like that, and Paredes is that guy. But one of the differentiators there that they really haven't had for a while is one of those guys that can move around that has offense along with that defensive versatility to that. And so he went on that big heater. Was it May, early June? I forget exactly the stretch, but he went on that big heater where he was just, you know, hitting everything right, left. He has his overall splits. Eventually righties were getting to him. As he cooled off, as everybody does when they get on these big heaters, but he showed his upside, and you know, the Rays target a certain type of player and think they can tap into something the previous organization couldn't. They actually got more out of Yandy Diaz than Cleveland ever did. I mean, Yandy's never going to elevate the ball like everybody wants him to, but they allow players to make the most of the skills that they have, and Paredes is going to continue to get those opportunities as long as the bat and the versatility plays out. I don't have a problem with him not being projected. If he's not projected as, hey, I don't know exactly where he's going to play, because that's going to happen. Like, you look at the ADP and they have him at third base. And you know, I'm sure we'll talk about what's coming in the capacity, but Paredes, as long as he's hitting, is going to stay somewhere in the lineup.
Yeah, that's kind of why I've been approaching him in DCs as one of my kind of targets in that realm of the draft with the positional flexibility, and I believe he's going to play too. So I'm a big fan of that. Let's go back to Manny Margolis. This is another guy I like late-round Rays. Another guy I'm targeting at ADP around 295 over the last couple of weeks. I just like Manny because, you know, if he plays, and even if it's just like 120 games, he's proven it's double-digit power and speed for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I think there's upside if he can actually play a full season. We'll see. But what's your thoughts on Manny Margot, who was injured last year but looks to be healthy going into 2023?
Yeah, the one thing that comes in the mind, and he's really good at stolen base proficiency too, and that's always helpful. You know, the one thing that I looked at, like, he was extremely – and, you know, when the Teflon or, you know, whatever, the bounce back on this, last year he overperformed with hitting with runners in scoring position. It was absurd. You know, he was Manny Margot ahead to the local fan base because he would come up and get that hit with the runner in scoring position to put, but he did extremely well in that type of area. And usually what comes up must come down a little bit. And so that's something to keep in mind there. And not, he was also hitting higher in the lineup. And now if you look at the way the lineup's projected, I'm looking at the current roster resource, they have him hitting sixth. That may cut into a stolen base numbers. Jeff Zimmerman had a good article recently. It talked about stolen base attempts based on the spot in the lineup, and 2 through 6 were not the great places for those. 1 or 7, 8, 9. So we'll see where that goes. Margot has shown, I would say, against lefties, he's probably hitting leadoff. I mean, he's really good against lefties, and overall, he's got a good history of accepting his walks and being a good OBP guy. The projections aren't showing that right now. With, you know, looking at the projections, 311, but that's just one set. I'm not looking at the whole matrix to see where things are. But he has hit leadoff. He's not miscast in that role, but there are certainly better guys in the offense to do that, depending on who the pitcher is. But for a lefty, there's a good chance he's going to be hitting leadoff in those games. But don't look for him, or for that matter, most guys, to have the same spot in the lineup every day. Batting, yeah, that's going to be moving around.
That's the Rays way, that's for sure. Let's talk catchers real quick. I'll group them together. You got Christian Betancourt, you have Francisco Mejia. both pros and cons. Looks like Betancourt, like we definitely saw some big pros last year between Oakland and Tampa Bay, playing a lot of first base, but he caught a lot with Tampa Bay. That was one thing that stood out to me when I looked at positional play based on the teams he was with. So how do you think that's going to shake out for these fantasy-wise in 2023?
Yeah, and you know, neither guy – I mean, catchers aren't great OBP league assets, but neither of these guys particularly are good about doing that. You know, Betancourt is the better – I would say he's the better overall defender. Mejia is a good thrower, and I would say he got better. He's gotten better at blocking pitches. I think the thing that is frustrating about Mejia is – he is extremely impatient at the plate. He will swing at pitches. You're like, dude, what the hell was that? Like we joked around talking about with Randy Rosarena on the bases sometimes. There are pitches Mejia is swinging at that are bouncing. They're far outside. They're up at his eyes. Like he has no plate discipline in that regard. Yet you look back at his minor league track record, and he had this pedigree of, you know, I'm a good hitter, but for whatever reason, that discipline has not translated to the major leagues. And so he was – got to be very frustrating to watch in that capacity. He hits better for average from the right, more power from the left-hand side. But I don't think we're going to see much more from Mejia. I'm frankly kind of surprised he's still with the club. When you look at, you know, the fan of me was hoping they were going to try to make an acquisition for another catcher. That has not materialized. Doesn't look like anything will materialize. And so I would put this at like a 60-40 split with Betancourt getting most of the playing time there. You know, Rene Pinto is the next guy in the organization. I only bring his name up because if you're in DC formats, you got to take him. You better have four catchers. And Pinto is a guy that's been sitting there in the late 40 rounds as the fourth catcher. And you look at his AAA numbers, and again, remind you about the ballpark in Durham, how some of that plays out. And Pinto, you know, kind of has a Jose Molina-like profile overall, but it's a name you may have to use in a DC. I think I had to use him last year a little bit because he was my fourth or fifth catcher on the roster. I was running out of bodies.
That makes sense. Makes sense. And we all have to – those rounds 40 through 50 get – yeah, just pretend – just plug your nose.
They get dicey.
That's interesting. Basically, the rest of the guys we haven't talked about, according to Roster Resource, maybe there's someone else, Jose Siri, Tyler Walls, Jonathan Aranda, Vidal Brujan. Any fantasy relevance to those guys? Like, they're all – we've all seen upside from most of them, actually, at some point in time. But anything that stands out to you for this year?
Yeah, so I would, you know, kind of talk about each one quickly. Siri, you know, the stolen base, his ability to steal bases is great, but he can't steal first, and that's what he's got to do in order to steal the rest of them. But they're not going to take him out of the lineup for his defense. And I would say the same thing for Michael Harris, for anybody saying, oh, he doesn't hit lefties. Well, Michael Harris's defense is not going to get benched just because of lefties in the mat. Now, Michael Harris may hit ninth on those days in the lineup, and Ozzie Albies may hit second instead of Harris. That could very well happen. But Siri is pretty much going to hit down in the bottom of the lineup because that's where his skill set belongs. But, I mean, this is a club that has carried a defensive first center fielder for the past, 9 years? And Siri is every bit, if not more, of a defender than Kiermaier has been. And so Siri could stay out there every day. And so if he can manage to get on base, then the stolen bases could be there in spades. Because, again, they have not done anything to add to this offense. So they're going to have to find other ways to create runs. And, you know, we talked about Jeff's article earlier. The bottom of the lineup is where stolen bases come. And if they can get Siri on base and allow him to steal second, there's Yandy, and there's Wander, and there's Randy. So he becomes that second leadoff hitter, if you will. But, again, he's got the skills to be a very nice source of stolen bases. He has to get on base. Taylor Walls, I'm curious with Taylor Walls because – there are times when he shows some pop, you're like, wow, like he's a big dude. Like you think about a guy that qualifies at three positions, you think of him like short dude. I'm 6'4". Taylor Walls is as tall as me. And he's a physical dude. He just hasn't been able to translate that into the plate much. And he got overmatched a lot last year. But again, he's also another guy that runs the base as well. And so I'm curious to see how he gets played too, because he's an excellent defender. And with the new strains on the infield positions, you know, he could be in there at second base, depending if it's a ground ball pitcher. Maybe they want to use him in there because he can cover more than range than anybody else can at second base. And he can play the outfield. I mean, they can pretty much play him everywhere. With Aranda, you know, you could say he's kind of like Luis Arraez light. Very similar profile, similar build, similar defensive flaws. Like, they have tried to find a defensive home for Aranda everywhere. First, third, second, short, outfield. He doesn't have a defensive home, but he can hit. That's the one thing. He's got excellent bat-to-ball skills. And so that either plays out here or that plays out somewhere else. There's going to be a value for Aranda somewhere in the league. So we'll see where that plays. And then finally with Brujan, there's another guy that can really run. Now, last year he got thrown out a little more than he had previously done. And so I want to see how that plays out. But he looked really overmatched at the plate overall in his limited time at the major league level. Conversely, he looked outstanding in AAA. I saw him play in the AAA World Series. I saw him play live. I went out to Durham, took the train over to from Charlotte, went to Durham. When Durham comes here to Charlotte, I go there. So I saw Brujan play either live or on MLB TV 8-9 times last year. Looks great there. It didn't look anything like the guy that I saw at the major league level. So all these guys are going to, in a DC format, obviously you have to find homes for all these guys. But in a standard 12-team mixed league, some of those names you have to keep on your watch list to see how things break out in camp, or if somebody gets traded and they go into a new opportunity.
Beautiful thing is they're all pretty young still. So there's a lot of development that could still be happening with them. And the Rays can do Rays things. You've seen it firsthand. Like, they make things work, surprisingly, with all those platoons and moving around and use the speed. You use their strengths to their advantage.
Oh, that's the second oldest guy on the roster. On the hitter, and if you look at the projected depth 13 that'll break camp, he's 1 month younger than Yandy Diaz. Those are your elder statesmen at 31.5 and 31.4 years old.
That's good stuff. And you go to the pitching staff, and all this guy's Jeffrey Springs somehow. Which I would have lost a bet if someone would have thrown that out there. Too bad Chucky's gone. That would have done it. But let's go to Shane McClanahan. This is a fun one. I know you talked about it at FPAS, and it's been a hot topic depending on what show or article you read around the world these days. He ended the season banged up. There's really no denying that. Velocity changed. Overall production changed. Still going at an ADP around 45, 46, where when he was dominating, there was the questions, should he go ahead of Colin Burns in drafts at the middle of last year? What's your thoughts heading into this year? Because you got your ear to the ground, basically, of Rays talk.
Before he got hurt last year, he was very, very much in the Cy Young argument. Very much. He was pitching. I said it early in the season. Like, he had a chance to have a 2018 Blake Snell-like season. That's when Snell won the Cy Young. And that's exactly what McClanahan was doing. And the magic last year was the changeup. It was a different – it became a whole new weapon for him. If you read the process that Jeff and Tanner write, they talk about how the magic of watching a guy early and seeing what a new pitch does and reacting before everybody else does. And you could watch McClanahan right out of the gate last year. You saw what that changeup was doing. You're like, oh, my God, this thing looks amazing. He already knew he had the good fastball and the good breaking ball, but the life on the changeup just by changing the grip – with it and working with Kyle Snyder took him to a whole new level. And then, the shoulder got in the way right there on the All-Star break. And then the numbers were different after, 4.20 ERA after that injury. So it's like, when you want to look at him, they managed him. If it was going to be too bad, I don't think we ever would have saw him pitch at the end of the season like we did. But they did let him pitch, and he did look, he looked effective doing that. So for me, I have a tough time projecting anybody over 160 innings anymore. I really do. It has to be an exception case. So it's like, when I look at McClanahan, I want to say, okay, give me 150. And it'll be a really good 150. But then everything else after that's gravy. And maybe that gravy is 25, 30 innings of baseball. Hopefully it's not an injury type of case with that. But, when everything's right, he is one of the best pitchers in the game. And it's like the kind of risk you take. But if it's roster build, if you take him as your first guy, that almost necessitates you assuming less risk with your next two pitchers, because you got to, like, I need a horse. I need somebody who, if I do that. But the same thing applies to a DeGrom. If you want to go ahead and try it with DeGrom, you have to go get another horse that you're going to be able to get that work from. So it's one of those things where you're taking McClanahan, but it's also now dictating what your next few rounds are going to look like too.
Yeah, I guess that's why me, the cautious, boring drafter, I just have kind of steered clear of Shane this season. I steer clear of Jacob DeGrom, too. So it's just kind of a thing for me. But, risk-reward, I guess, is the question of the day there. let's talk risk reward again in Tyler Glass now, who we know missed pretty much all of last season with an injury. ADP of 83 right now. Reports are he's feeling good. He's going to be ready for camp. I just have a hard time for a guy that missed all that time with that injury to expect him to be right back to where he was beforehand, where some people think he will be. So maybe I'm wrong. What's your thoughts on Glassner?
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see him come back pitch last year. As you know, even though it was limited, it's people who have heard me talk about Tommy John, the way I treat these pitchers is I usually want two full years until I get that guy on my roster again, because we know the velocity, and we saw it with we saw this all play out with Glassner last year. He came back and pitched in that brief time, and velocity wasn't the problem, but the command was, and that's always been the problem with these guys. You can make it back in a year. And he did it. You know, he had a surgery in August and he pitched in September. You can make it back in that time, but the command is what is always last to come back. And that's to be expected when you take that big type of layoff from anything. I mean, if you want to play basketball, you take a year off from shooting free throws, you may airball your first few. It's going to happen with that. And so, with Glassnow, he's got part of the issue was his ability to pound the strike zone, get ahead, and then force the hitter to go in protect mode. And we saw it with Pete Fairbanks last year as he was closing. It was the same approach, like throw as hard as you can high and throw that curve in the dirt and good luck guessing right. And that's what Glassnow is able to do when everything's together. So I would expect some more bumps in the road with his command, because by April that puts him 18 months away from his surgery. So he's closer to that finish line. But if you're running into 2023 expecting what you thought he was going to be in 2021, I'm not with you there. The ADP is, I don't believe, is too crazy. You know, like his max has been 105, his min has been 70. I've only done two drafts. I've had him in neither. With that, so when I'm looking at that, I just need to, again, it's going to dictate if you do that. It's going to dictate some of the other moves you could make. But I would caution people into expecting him to be what you thought he was going to be before the injury. And part of this issue is Justin Verlander just spoiled it for everybody.
Yes.
But Verlander had a longer recovery. He had a longer time to get back. But Justin Verlander just blew it for Tyler Glass. Everybody's looking at him like, well, this could be Verlander. And it could be. It's in the 90th percentile type of outcome. It could happen. But that's the point. If Justin Verlander had not happened last year, I'm not sure Glassnow is going in the top 100.
You make a great point there, and I'm going to put some more rain on the parade of the Glassnow thing, just because it's not a talent question for me. Like, I liked Verlander because, to me, at his age, his time off, and they gave him money, they're going to pitch until his arm fell off again, in my mind. He was a different case than a guy like Glassnow's age. And also looking at Glassnow's just career, he hasn't pitched over 100 innings since 2018. Yeah. Like, the guy hasn't had the workload for me to see like a massive jump. Like, if he gets to back 100 this year, 120, I think that's a great point for then your 2-year window next year. Let's get back on board and have some fun. So it's nothing against Glassnow. It's just like that. You talk about the risk reward. It's asking a lot for a guy that just hasn't had the workload in forever, coming off an injury to pull it off. All right, let's talk Drew Rasmussen. We got a couple of young arms here that are really fun to talk about. Rasmussen ADP recently about 174. Saw some real, real big improvements as the season went. See, he threw 146 innings last year with the big club, which is huge. Ratios were great. What's your outlook on him?
Not bad for a guy that was a former reliever in Milwaukee. So earlier I made the comment that the club excels at helping people do the best with what they have. And I firmly believe Rasmussen's the best situation of this with pitching, because Rasmussen doesn't have a good changeup. It's garbage. And they basically said, stop using it. Use your fastball and use your breaking balls. And what he's done, and you could see this, you saw it starting in the late in 2021, and then it carried over last year. You know, he just pounds the strike zone. He's not out there to mess around. I'm honestly surprised. Like, if the Rays let him stay in their 9 innings, he could pull a Maddox. He truly could, because he is that efficient. He is just throwing it right around the periphery of the strike zone, changing eye levels in, out with 3 pitches. And he just puts you on the defensive. And you look at the numbers, you can see that, you know, when a pitcher has the high ground, you know, it's game over a lot of the time. And that's with Rasmus. You look at the profile, he should not be as good as he is. But he's a good example also of a real baseball pitcher and the difference between that and the fantasy, because he doesn't do, you know, he doesn't go too deeply into games. He does his job for the real baseball team, but he's a 5-6 inning guy. So that puts some of his wins at risk. And he did maximize the wins he got last year, but that also cuts into the volume of the strikeouts because he's not out there enough. And again, he's not out there to strike guys out. He's out there to get guys out. And he will often pitch like that, but the ratios are really good. And so that's where, you know, you look at his ADP right now, like I said, it's 172. He's gone 148, 194. That's like fourth pitcher territory most of the time with that. In fact, I took him in his league and I took him 16 picks. I ended up getting him a pick 188 is when I ended up taking him because I was like, I just can't let him go by again after this. So it's like, I like him, but I also understand what his limitations are. But you know, just because you come out in after five complete doesn't mean you can't get that win. And the way they use the bullpen can still protect that win. It could also go to somebody else, as we've often seen. But I don't know if there's another, like he went 148. I'm not, you know, there's not a 175 coming for him this year. I don't believe. I don't believe they wanted to get him to 148 last year. They just had no choice.
Yeah, no, that makes sense because I was kind of surprised by how much they kind of let him go because we're used to, at least I am from the outside looking in, we're used to the Rays kind of slow playing their younger pitchers and kind of getting them going. So I was surprised him and then Jeffrey Springs we're going to talk about too. They kind of started letting them go a little bit more than I expected as the season went on. Like not super deep, like you said, but just enough to kind of not be like, you know, four and out type guys. They're not doing the Ryan Yarbrough through everybody. So it was interesting. So let's talk Jeffrey Springs. And he's a very popular name. We talked about how he got extended financially, ADP at 156. Seems to have the more strikeout stuff than Rasmussen, but it seems like there's still, I guess, you know, innings wise, kind of a lot of similarities there too. So how do you approach him this year?
Yeah, so they, you know, the Rays have typically liked to keep the innings increase year over year somewhere around 20-23% is what they've historically gone for. But like I said, they really didn't have much of a choice last year, and so Rasmussen and Springs, they both had to extend longer than they wanted them to. So that was a little bit rough. But it worked out. I mean, but for him, one of the things they've, you know, you think about when that trade happened, when they took the trade and they got him from Boston for Rolando Hernandez. I forget exactly the catcher, but I know there was a lot of, man, why did we give up that guy, especially to Boston? And it's worked out really well for Springs, but they have gone through the Rays way of working up and down with the fastball, going side to side with the breaking stuff and keeping the soft stuff down. And the recipe has worked extremely well for him. Again, Springs is another guy who, you know, throws it all around the strike zone and puts hitter on the defensive. He's not out there, you know, trying to strike out people, but it can work with that crafty lefty approach. So I do like it. Like if you were to say who's going to lead this club in innings this year, it could very well be him. I would still say McClanahan's the odds on favorite, but if it's not him, it's going to be Springs just because sometimes he looks like he's out there pitching in a rocking chair and it's fun to watch. I do like crafty lefties that I mentioned on the RotoWire podcast. I grew up as a big Jimmy Key fan. I love watching Jimmy Key pitch for Toronto and Jeffrey Springs, different arm angle. Obviously Key was more of a side armer, but same type of thing. It looked like they're pitching in a rocking chair every now and then. And then every night you're thinking, okay, here comes changeup and wham, fastball. And you're like, God, why? The thing was right down the middle. Why didn't he swing at it? Well, because he wasn't expecting it. It's not like you can react that quickly. So it was fun. It's been fun to watch his growth as a pitcher from somebody who was just a relief asset. And especially, remember, he bounced back from a pretty nasty knee injury too. That was nice. I mean, that was a nasty knee on fielding a batted ball. It was just gross when it happened, but he's bounced back rather nicely from that.
Yeah, Springs was a nice midseason acquisition for fantasy purposes last year. He was very, like you said, it's strikeouts, made it look easy. For those younger listeners that don't know who Jimmy Key is, he legit looks like he's in a rocking chair when he pitches. Like Jason was saying, like, go check it out. I'm picturing it as he's saying it and the arm angle and everything. Like, it's, yeah, it fits pretty well. Yankees, Jays, different options. Pick your poisons, but he's out there. And it's very interesting.
Hey, I would say Springs was my fifth round reserve pick in my home AL league. Fifth round reserve pick. That's where he was last year. And he's made that kind of jump in one season.
Yep. Closer to 150 now. So around 10 or 11 in a 15 teamer here. You're having to pay the price, which is not a bad price to pay. Last pitcher we'll mention here and talk about paying the price. I think this was the Rays' most expensive contract that they've given
ever.
Which is, that's like, I just like, man alive. Zach Eflin, and this is kind of a fun one because if you played fantasy long enough, like, you know, you have, Jason, is there's been runs where we've been all team Eflin and it's worked really well, and then you get on team Eflin and it just blows up in your face. And like, we've had that up and down roller coaster with him. So what's your thoughts now going into Tampa, a team that knows how to utilize pitching, like you said, do what they do best, use your repertoire basically. How do you see him for 2023?
I just hope the legs stay healthy. That's been the problem. It's been his lower half, and pitchers need that, obviously, and that's been the problem with him. But, you know, this was Corey Kluber's role last year. Eflin's obviously not as old as Kluber, but this was Kluber's role last year. It's like you're a contact suppressor, and pitching in Tropicana Field plays to that. And if you have the defense and Eflin certainly does, depending which way he wants to go. If he wants to, like, okay, I'm going to go after fly balls more, he's like, you've got Ball Hawk and Jose Siri. Manny Margot's a strong defender. Randy Rosarena can get the fly, can chase down the fly balls. I mean, he'll make crazy cutoff throws, but there are different things. But there are Ball Hawks in the outfield, and they have good defense on the end. I'm just really curious to see how the defense is going to play this year with standard alignments. Again, Yandy Diaz looks like a statue and moves like one at third base for the most part. So I want to see how that's all going to play out in that capacity with it. So Eflin has the ability to be that contact suppressor that Corey Kluber was last year with that. I just hope the legs can stay healthy because they need, they need that kind of work. When you try to look at the rest of the rotation, it's like, okay, we've already talked about question marks on the innings with some of those guys. And then like the next guys up are, you know, there's no more Ryan Yarbrough up to bounce around. Maybe Yanni Chirinos can do a little bit. You have Josh Fleming, who is, I don't know. There are times when Josh Fleming looks absolutely horrendous, and there are times when you're like, oh, maybe there's something there. The big question mark for me this year is Luis Patino, because Patino, a lot of people, we mentioned the Josh Lowe dart earlier that people were throwing. Mm-hmm. People were on that Patino train last year, and it took two-thirds of an inning for that to blow up when he had an oblique injury in his first outing. And then he, you know, missed time, and it has not worked out well for him. So that's a big wild card this year. I would like, given the team's track record for, you know, fixing issues, I would like to see what they do with Patino. Maybe they bring him back into workload by letting him work some of that middle relief, much like they did Springs and Rasmussen when they first got him from Milwaukee, and see what's there to help rebuild him. But that's a big wild card. That's somebody last year that people were looking at as a late round sleeper who was now like in a slumber. You look at the ADP, he's way down there. And so I want to, to see what's there, but that's kind of what's, they need that to happen. And then you got Taj Bradley as well. So that's like the next up, but there's a pretty big drop off from the starting five to the next four. They don't have the depth currently to absorb that type of injury. So Eflin was an absolute target that they needed to get, because there's a gap there. Most of the promise is on the hitting side. I'm not sure what Bradley's going to be this year in that capacity, but he would have been the next guy.
Yeah, I like the Patino shout, though, because I remember, I can't remember what I was doing. I do DFS 5 days a week for other stuff, and I think I messaged you or added you on Twitter or something, said, why can't he get a darn left-handed bat out or something? He said, because he throws his changeup. It's like, it was a whole conversation. It's like an eye-opener of something seems so simple that you knew like the answer immediately. And I'm like, why can't they figure this out? Like, the talent's there. He just hasn't put it together. It's just like, yeah. So that's baseball in a nutshell.
But if you're in the right organization, I mean, this organization loves to teach guys changeups, and if they can throw it, then it can work. If they can't, I mean, like I said, Rasmussen, they couldn't really get one for him. So fine, just don't throw it. They were able to get one, help McClanahan do one. They've helped, Glasnow's worked with the splitter. They evolved one for him. But if it's not going to come together for Patino, then maybe they have to turn him into a reliever. He's got the fastball slider, but he's got to also stay healthy on the mound. And like you said, he's still young, too. Yep. They've got time.
Let's talk bullpen real quick. Fairbanks, he got his money. You talked about the surgeries, and he's always looked great when he's back there and healthy. But there's a bunch of talented arms back there, like usual. That's one thing the Rays do is they build a slew of relievers. So how do you attack this bullpen come fantasy time?
So a reminder for those who don't know, four consecutive seasons, this club's had at least 10 pitchers with one save, at least 10 pitchers. They set the record in the COVID season. They only needed 60 games and 14 guys to get one save. All right. So this is when things get crazy. But that said, they have had a primary closer before. And when I say primary, I'm not talking like every save, but primary. Emilio Pagan saved 20 games for this club at one point. Alex Colome was a primary closer. Andrew Kittredge was a primary guy before he got hurt. Nick Anderson was a primary guy before he got hurt. I don't believe you give Pete Fairbanks the contract they just did and say you're not going to be the primary guy. So I look at him as being the primary guy. You know, for me, it's like I mentioned the XFL. We had the XFL draft at First Pitch Arizona. I bought Pete Fairbanks in that draft, even though I already had Emmanuel Clase and Felix Bautista. It's like I went ahead and went there anyhow, because back then I was like, he's going to be the guy. Because one of the things that was so impressive with Fairbanks, and I mentioned he's gotten better every year, you know, he has worked his delivery. So he's kind of got almost that short arm cycle that Lucas Giolito made popular when he had his breakout. But that's what Fairbanks is doing. But he's also raised his arm angle. And so he's got that fastball that's always had the velocity and he's got the ride, but then he throws that 11-5 slider, which comes at you and just like drops off. And so if you're trying to protect against a slider, you've got no chance catching up to the 100. Or conversely, if you're sitting on 100 and you start cheating on that, and that all of a sudden it's like out of that tunnel, here comes a slider, I'm in trouble. I believe if I have the numbers right, the Fairbanks gave up one home run last year. It was on the very first pitch that he threw.
Oh, jeez.
Very first pitch that he threw, he gave up one home run to Austin Hayes, and that was the last home run that he allowed. Yes, in fact, that's true. He gave up one home run in the 24 innings. It was the very first pitch of the season he threw to Austin Hayes. I remember watching that game, because I'm like, oh, yeah, Fairbanks is back. First pitch, boom. And I'm like, ooh. Inauspicious debut. But the strikeout rates have always been there. But you go look at his player profile, the big difference last year is the walks disappeared. I mean, he was his walks per nine were over four each of the previous seasons, and his walk rate was 10, 12, 11, then last year 3.4. They disappeared, and that's what happens when you can get ahead with number one and then throw number two. And that's why it's just so impressive to watch him come out and flat out dominate. And so for me, yeah, there'll probably be 10 guys with one plus save again this year, because there are a number of candidates. You know, Jason Adam, we saw what he did last year, and that's a good example of about a very late addition. Jason Adam was added to the right, I think right as the team was going to camp, they added Jason Adam last year on a minor league deal. Sean Armstrong, you look at Eno Saris' stuff plus numbers, Sean Armstrong shows out good. In fact, Sean Armstrong's stuff plus was one spot higher than Shane McClanahan's. Wow. So it's like there's some stuff. And then Garrett Clevenger, Colin Poche, it's like they've got different guys. That said, Pete Fairbanks is the number one, but he's not the 1A that a Clase or a Bautista are for other organizations. He's the one here, but there's going to be a 1B, a 1C, a 1D, and a 1E that are also going to be in the play as well. And those guys could have different types of success. Like even before Jordan Romano became the closer in Toronto, he had value in his other role. And that's where we could see a Clevenger or a Armstrong or Adam. I mean, Adam did it last year, but Adam's numbers were so insane last year. You got to expect it to come back to earth a little bit more, which opens up opportunities for somebody else. And we mentioned Poche, who's now two full years back from his Tommy John surgery. And he's somebody who absolutely has to have his fastball command, because his fastball is like 88% of his offering. And then his breaking balls showed promise last year. But when he gets into trouble with the home runs, it's missed fastballs. That's it, because he's throwing that riding fastball so often. If it misses, it gets crushed. Now he's fully back from that, and he's always been able to miss bats. So I'm excited to see what Poche can bring to the table, even though it's been a rough ride since his recovery from Tommy John.
Yeah, it's always the Rays are always fun to watch in that regard. Fantasy pain in the butts, but fun to watch because they always have guys that can put it together. And you know, at least Fairbanks at an ADP of 175 doesn't crush you. And I've always been okay with taking the Rays quote unquote number one heading into the season, because like you said, he's going to get you usually pretty good ratio strikeouts, and he's going to run into hopefully 20-ish saves, maybe 15 to 20. So you're in the ballpark there. Yeah. Last but not least, before we head on out of here. Prospect wise, you mentioned Pinto behind the dish. We would talk Josh Lowe. We talked Patino. Is there anybody else potentially for 2023 that you could see having an impact?
Curtis Mead, I mentioned earlier, like what happens at third. Curtis Mead is where I want to see what happens. Curtis Mead could play, like right now, he's projected, they have him as a third baseman, but the reports talk about The arm may not be able to play at third base. Let's not forget that his season ended last year with arm soreness. And so perhaps they make room for him in the outfield or DH or move him around. But Curtis Meade is the exciting, the more exciting hitter tool. Kyle Manzardo at first base. But the problem with first base prospects is just the high bar that you have for that power. And that's where, you know, A lot of fantasy money has been wasted on chasing first base prospects, and so many of them fail because the bar is high. Like, you need to be a 25 plus home run guy there, and that may not happen there. But Meade could come up and hit for average and be a run producer quickly. He's really good in that capacity, and they could move him around a little bit. So that's the one I'm excited about to see how that plays out in that regard. But so we'll have to see. But again, this team historically slow plays these types of guys, so we'll have to see, you know, what the timeline is for that. But the fact that they did not to date make any offseason acquisitions either tells me, one, like I said earlier, they're playing a game of chicken with guys like Jerickson Profar, possibly Gary Sanchez doing something like that, or B, they are banking on these kids coming up, and Meade will get an opportunity rather quickly. Let's not forget that Josh Lowe did make the opening day roster last year. People weren't expecting that. They gave him a contract. They brought him up. They sent him down a week later, but he did make the opening day roster. So it's not out of the realm of possibility if Meade comes up and just rakes all throughout camp.
So you're saying there's a chance. That's always good. I honestly, Gary Sanchez, I'm surprised. We know the faults of Gary Sanchez, but figured some team would have signed him by now. Some team that looking for some power, like the Giants. I was okay with that, as you can tell, like the reports this past week, and they're not into Joey Bart. They're not like in love with him. So I was
cool with that.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But we'll wrap it up there, Jason. Before we head on out, why don't you remind everybody like what you got coming on at RotoWire, Sleeper of the Bust, and much more.
Sure. So RotoWire, the collect calls column comes out every week. We are halfway through the bold prediction. I do a hitter and a pitcher from all 30 teams by the end. And so this week, the NL Central predictions will be hitting. So far, I've done both the AL NL East and the AL Central. And so I will have that series wrapped up here by the end of this month. So as March kicks off, March Madness, heavy draft season, you will have 60 names, 30 hitters, 30 pitchers to look at and hold me accountable. I do talk about in the first article of that series the ones I did really well on last year. I also point out the ones I really blew it on. So I do like doing that kind of accountability on that, but I enjoy that. And then Sleeper in a Bus podcast on Sundays. We are recording on Super Bowl Sunday, and we are recording on the 19th, but then we're not recording at the end of the month because it's Potapalooza weekend. So we will have episodes. I know Paul and Justin have wrapped up all the positional player previews. Justin and I, if you haven't listened to the most recent one, we each picked a favorite target for each of the 10 standard roto categories after pick 300. And I had a blast doing that because you know, you listen to a lot of podcasts and everybody's all about like, who are you going to take in the first 3-4 rounds? That gets beaten to death. It's like, you know, give me the end game because that's where you win. Yeah, I made comment that the DC that I won last year, I took Stephen Kwan in the 38th round and I took Cal Raleigh in the 39th round. That helped me. There's no doubt that helped me win the league because you get that kind of value. As you mentioned, after round 40, you're holding your nose picking. Well, those two guys almost made it around 40 and I took them back to back rounds. And so that's where you win leagues is late in the game. You know, you can lose a league early in the draft, but you win them late. And that's why I really enjoyed the last podcast because it gave us an opportunity to talk about names that are for the most part going undrafted in standard mixed league formats right now. If anything, they're going in the reserves, but we really were like outside the top 350. We rarely jumped above 350 and talking about the 20 names that we discussed on the podcast.
Yeah, I love breakdowns like that because you're right. We're all guilty of it at some point in time doing some early round stuff. But like Bloomfield and I started doing pockets 1 through 150, 150 to 200, 200, whatever. And it really opens your eyes to like building from the middle into the draft before you get to the front. So definitely a different way to approach things. And I'm looking forward to checking that one out. But as always, Jason, thanks for joining me. Pleasure talking to you and good luck this season.
Awesome. Thanks for having me and hope to see you soon, bud.
Yes, indeed. Everybody, check him out again. If you're not, for some weird reason, following him on Twitter at Jason Collette. But this was your Bench with Bubba Tampa Bay Rays season preview. Catch you guys next time.
one way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.